Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beats. I personally take Super Beats when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beats gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at intelligentbeats.com. That's intelligentbeats.com. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's guest is Rob Furkirk. He's Scientific Director of the Alliance for Natural Health in Europe, as well as ANH International. We're visiting with him. He's speaking to us from his offices in London about the health scene over in Europe. And so the next theme that I want to touch upon is Britain has the NHS, the National Health System. It's a single-party system. A lot of people in the United States advocating a single-party system is the most logical way to deliver healthcare equitably and economically. Many of us are concerned with getting integrative medical services with naturally minded healthcare practitioners. Rob, is the NHS framework stifling the expression of natural medicine?
Well, it certainly is. I think there's two ways of looking at it. In terms of you being essentially a victim of a system that means that you really can't get access to healthcare because your socioeconomic status doesn't allow it, the NHS actually provides a pretty useful stopgap. So you won't find the same level of if you like, healthcare poverty.
Right, you won't fall through the cracks. You're not likely to fall through the cracks.
And obviously, if you get a trauma injury, for example, you get cared for pretty well. Where the system starts to fall apart, and let's put in perspective the fact that the National Health Service is the fifth largest corporation in the world. It employs 1.7 million people.
Wow.
So it's akin to a super tanker.
Wow.
My eldest son is actually a doctor in it, so I've had, firsthand, or I should say secondhand experience of seeing his training and then his practice now as a junior doctor. And yes, it's a very constrictive system that operates according to what are sometimes referred to as tram lines.
There's this thing called NICE there. NICE. It's a great acronym. It's NICE. But what does NICE mean?
The National Institute for Health Care and Clinical Excellence. And essentially, it creates guidelines that NHS doctors are meant to follow. The problem is that they act as tram lines. And if you step out of line, the consequences are very, very severe. So you have the General Medical Council that adjudicates your function as a doctor. And there is now an alarming increase in suicide rates amongst doctors. And you're more than 20 times more likely to commit suicide as a doctor if you are under investigation by the GMC.
Wow, yeah. So, in other words, if you practice in, say, an innovative way, and perhaps you're not going to go through the usual medical management of a certain condition, you may use natural care, diet modification, lifestyle modification with perhaps botanical treatments, that might be considered, going off the ranch.
Correct. So, of the doctors that are being challenged, a significant number have been ones who are attempting to incorporate increasing amounts of integrative medicine practice into their practices. At the same time, one of the things that we've been doing within ANH is helping doctors who want to move in that direction to do it in a way that they're not going to lose their licenses or be adjudicated by the GMC. And there are a number of key general practitioners now, because obviously it suits the generalists more than the specialists, who are really engaging with, for example, functional medicine, and are really wanting to do something about incorporating it into standard practice so that patients can essentially get a better deal.
Is it easier or harder to find an alternative practitioner in England than in the United States?
It is way harder to find a medical doctor that is practicing natural medicine for the very reasons that we've just discussed. The vast majority of practitioners are non-medical doctors.
Okay.
And then they will be certified by their own particular organization.
So like herbalists, acupuncturists, perhaps some form of naturopaths.
Nutritional therapists, naturopaths, etc. The chances of them being statutorily regulated, chiropractors have been statutory regulated. That was quite a shenanigans. It involved a court case as well. And now there's very little likelihood that any of the other modalities will be recognized as a profession, as a healthcare profession. So it's one way of essentially keeping these natural medicine practitioners out in the margins, in the deep grass.
What about homeopathy? A lot of controversy about homeopathy from what I'm reading over there in England. It's a popular practice. It's been embraced by the royals, and yet there's been some real pushback.
There has been pushback. You've got to look at two sides of it. One is the availability of the homeopathic products. The other is the practice. So on the product side, because essentially, there is an axis between Germany and France that is the most powerful axis for creating European law. What they did back in 2004 is build in a simplified licensing system for homeopathic medicines. And so a large number, but still leaving out many others, of homeopathic medicines were licensed for use and can be used legally.
Well, and there's a big economic incentive because many of the remedies actually originate from Germany and France. So it's a big industry for those countries.
Exactly. So what has happened is that the detractors of homeopathy have gone absolutely full out on attacking the practice.
They're very vociferous, those rationalists and skeptics. I mean, they're just, you know, it really puts a bug up them when they hear about homeopathy.
I try to think of them as irrationalists, but they have been. I mean, they are largely people who spend their days locked behind a computer screen, who understand very little either the published science and the various meta-analyses that have even found in favor of a positive benefit for homeopathy. But what they really fail to engage with is either what the what happens in a clinical environment in terms of clinical experience, or actually just engaging with a healthcare system in which a patient is more empowered to make free choices. And having said that, there are particular high-level people within the National Health Service who are beginning to realize, you know, we've been talking patient-centered healthcare for a very long time. It's actually built into the NHS constitution, but we're really not doing it. And so tomorrow is a good example of a day in which I'm going to visit some vaccine-damaged children and their families who are essentially being pushed out into the cold. They are utterly convinced that the decline in the health of these children occurred after being force-fed essentially the HPV vaccine. And the bottom line is, as you look more and more into this whole issue, you realize that, first of all, the MHRA, which is the equivalent of the US FDA, has been sitting on data on the extraordinarily higher rate of adverse effects associated with HPV that is probably about 8 times higher than the next most problematic vaccine, which is MMR. Yeah. And so there are over 8,000 adverse events, and bearing in mind HPV hasn't been around very long.
So there's a so-called Gardasil vaccine, which I have to say that even I actually have seen a couple of patients who've been utterly devastated by that vaccine, I'm convinced.
Yes, and of course they're trying to extend its use. Gardasil 9 is out there. We are, you know, aware that trials have recently been conducted in India on young girls, and the rates of adverse effect there have been similarly pretty outrageous. So those are the sorts of events that I think stimulate, particularly when they get out in the open, the freedom of information requests that expose the concealing of adverse events associated with HPV was actually one of the leading UK newspapers, the Independent newspaper. They decided to do the freedom of information request, and we're all now sort of riding on that wave. We have correspondence now running with the Secretary of State for Health, and demanding that something is done. Now, these kind of issues, I think, do ultimately enable people to feel more empowered and more in control of their decisions. And if you can get people to say, look, I know you've been telling us that we all should get vaccines, and, you know, 90% or more of the 12 to 13-year-old female population should be vaccinated, but we want to do it a different way. We want to look after our immune systems. We want to teach sexual education to our children so they don't have to effectively, you know, use the vaccine as if it was some kind of contraceptive, which is one way in which it's being interpreted in the community.
Right. We know you're going to engage in unsafe sex. We're resigned to that fact, so we're going to give you, a million vaccines to protect against all manner of harm. That may not be the most prudent approach. What's your assessment of the fitness of Brits and Europeans? I know you're a real fitness buff. You're a long distance cyclist, and you take extraordinary care of yourself. Reading articles about the expanding waistlines and the declining fitness of the UK population.
Yeah, the UK population, if you like, in terms of many of its healthcare stats, is more akin to the US population. The bottom line is it has one of the highest obesity rates in Europe. What's interesting is that if you look at some other European populations, you'll see, for example, just across the channel, you get to the Netherlands. I'm actually a Dutch national myself. And the diet, if you look at macro and micronutrient intakes and caloric intake, the Dutch diet is even worse than the British diet. Having said that, the Dutch fare pretty well in healthcare stats, and you know it's now being viewed increasingly like the Dutch paradox. You'll remember the French paradox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Related to the French consuming large amounts of saturated fats. As far as Holland is concerned, it's related to the high levels of activity, and dare I say, bicycle has a big part to play in all of that.
Yeah.
So, one of the difficulties we have in a country like Britain is that if you continue to look only at mean statistics, at the average, you actually miss many of the really interesting trends that are going on. So, within the UK, you know, to every action is an equal and opposite reaction. There are large numbers of people who are really becoming extremely health aware. Last weekend, we've just had the Love Natural, Love Organic show in London. I had to give two lectures and three demos. And in the demos, what we were helping people with is to become more keto adapted, how to become better fat burners. Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, we were absolutely rammed. And that's a big difference to a few years back. On the lectures, I spoke on subjects like comparing the human gut microbiome with the soil microbiome so that people can make this link up between the idea of being exposed continuously to routine antibiotic treatments when they're young or growing up and the kind of impact that has on sterilizing the gut and the use of fungicide, pesticides, and other systems in agriculture. A healthy crop plant is as dependent on a rich living soil, an active biological rhizosphere, as humans are on a really healthy, diverse gut microbiome. And so, yes, we are seeing some big changes, but of course those changes are happening the world over. They are absolutely intrinsically linked to an increasing disillusionment in the kind of magic bullet drug, you know, post-penicillin market. You know, people thought that we could use the same approach with, you know, obesity, with type 2 diabetes, with metformin, with statins, and, you know, example after example shows that that approach has failed, and even the magic bullet of antibiotics now are creating massive problems with antibiotic resistance. So we need a new paradigm, and I think the people are really centrally driving a desire for something completely new that really has natural medicine and integrative medicine at its roots.
And A&H Europe is at the forefront of that initiative. It's the website is A&H-Europe.org. Is that correct?
Correct, Ron.
Okay. And so our guest today, Rob Furkirk, scientific director of A&H in the United States, of which I'm a board member, and he's also executive director for A&H International and A&H Europe. Rob, finally, tell us about the Health Squared initiative.
Well, what we did was set up essentially a conversation space, New Health, spelled NUHealth2.org, NewHealthSquared.org. It is a conversation space to allow discussion and, if you like, growth and development of the whole notion of integrative medicine in a mainstream context. I think one of the problems that many of us have seen over the years is that there is a kind of brick wall that exists between what is viewed as integrative and what is viewed as, you know, orthodoxy. And one of the difficulties as well is that the two sides are often very polarized in their views, and when they do have interactions, those interactions are often negative, and they involve, you know, throwing rotten eggs and tomatoes at each other. So essentially, by bringing in people who are, if you like, from the mainstream, which includes, for example, doctors that are within the National Health Service who are already very open, already practicing integrative oncology within the limits that you can within the NHS. GPs in the same position, but there is an opportunity to really, if you like, grow the credibility of employing, adopting much higher levels of integrative medicine. And we had our first event in March, which involved really bringing speakers from all over the world into a think tank so that we could develop a white paper as to what a new healthcare system might look like that was truly sustainable and built around natural modalities as the primary approach. And in November, we will have a second conference in London that essentially finds ways of taking some of these ideas into a lay public audience of 250 to 300 people. It will involve everything from doctors who can help people manage their own health better to combine food, physical activity, and rest more effectively so that they can not just think it's about the food that they're eating or the drugs that they're taking. It's about handling diet and lifestyle as a unit and finding practical ways of doing it. It's also about what kind of tech can be used. We've seen, you know, Apple, Google, and
wearables and the, you know, Fitbits wearables and so on.
Exactly. There is a huge revolution going on. There is easy access to genetic testing. How do you use it to find out how your individuality may require a different prescription of food or activity or lifestyle? So it's going to be very practically orientated so that we can effectively have a test bed that, again, allows greater expansion. We believe that, you know, with the sheer cost of managing spiraling rates of chronic disease, unless the public is more engaged in managing their own health and finding ways of doing it within a kind of natural medicine framework, we're going to be in serious trouble in the coming generations.
Well, indeed. That's very well stated. HealthSquared.org is where you can get information on this initiative. And Rob, you know, you're a national treasure. Not all the crown jewels are locked up in the Tower of London, so keep at it. And thanks for being there for us and for the population of Europe, where, you know, unfortunately, the world is linked, fortunately or unfortunately. And, some, you know, if we allow trends to deteriorate overseas, that may have a very negative effect for us here in the United States. So keep up the good fight. Thanks,
Ron,
for joining us.
Thank you so much. And thanks for all the great work that's going on at NHUSA as well.
I really love, you know, it's my passion. Rob Verkerk, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.